Cade Míle Fáilte, but for who and at what cost? Tourism chiefs today issued a grave warning for the summer ahead, with most hotels set to continue housing refugees and asylum seekers, those that are already. The Green Party leader Eamon Ryan has said Ireland will not turn away refugees despite any short-term effects on the tourism and hospitality sector. And these warnings, Gráinne, from tourism bosses, from tourism chiefs, coming at the Oireachtas Tourism Committee today. What exactly was said? What exactly did we hear?
Yeah, so there is concern that the tourism sector and the hotel sector could face losing 1.1 billion in revenue this year due to a shortage of accommodation, which I suppose puts the scale of the issue into context. And then part of the reason is, the not just the lack of accommodation available, but then the knock-on effect that has on the prices of the accommodation that is available, and that would put the risk, the reputation of Irish tourism abroad in jeopardy, because we've had issues before when prices skyrocketed that put people off coming to Ireland. It also said that there was an issue with some things that we've heard are an issue before, renting cars. There would be a shortage of cars available to rent, that there would be a shortage of in areas where there is a dense concentration of, say, Ukrainian refugees in Donegal, for example, that would lower the options for, say, a gift shop or a restaurant
the message was that hotels who have contracts with the state already to house refugees, house asylum seekers, that they will continue with those contracts in the weeks and months ahead, and that will have a knock-on effect on the coffee shop, on the Jarvie, whatever it might be in the tourist area.
So even though over the winter period these hotels were buoyed by kind of government contracts, those that continue to renew them, at least, because we know there's an issue with places who are not renewing them, those who continue to renew them, that will still have an impact on the kind of ancillary services around that hotel, particularly in local areas or rural areas.
Catherine Connolly, the chief executive of the Irish tourism industry, saying the tourism sector should play its part in this humanitarian response, but it shouldn't be the primary provider of accommodation. How do you strike the balance here?
Well, that is a fundamental question. How do we strike the balance? So maybe I'll go around in a circle in relation to this. I think this country should be crying out for peace. But that's the first thing. I don't hear voices trying to stop the war in the Ukraine. I hear warmongering cries, and I'm on record for condemning the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. So that goes without saying. But we need to stop this war, and that's not happening. We need to make our neutrality mean something. Now, the consequences of what we've done, we've taken in over 70,000 Ukrainians, which absolutely to welcome in the Ukrainians. What we've done is created a two-tier asylum refugee thing, which is simply unacceptable. It's abominable, really, in my view, that we now distinguish between refugees, the status. It undermines the fundamental principle behind asylum seekers or refugees coming to our country, and they should be getting the same treatment and the same care. That's a problem. Then we went to the hotels, and we took over the hotels. I was in Carna recently, in the heart of Connemara. The hotel is out of action. We passed by Mam Cross, Peacock's Hotel, out of action. These hotels are fundamental to the economy of the area, and they're gone. To take them over for a short period of time in an emergency was certainly understandable. At what point then was an analysis done? The government are know exactly the length of contracts, the duration of the contracts. What plans were made? What effort was made to give alternative of accommodation? What has happened to the modular building projects that they talk about so much? At what stage did the government sit down and do an analysis of the effect on the local economy in terms of the closure of hotels and the various other guest houses, and the analysis of the effects of that? That has to take place. But if I go back again to my first point, at some stage, we have to use our voices to say, this war can't go on. We cannot keep doing this. The industrial complex, the arms industry, are making massive profits out of this. At some stage, we have to use our voice and take courage in our hands and lead in relation to this. In the meantime, we have a mess on our hands now that we need to look at in a just and fair way.
Balance, what is the key, the word you said there and was used as well today. And Jen Nash, Owen O'Mara Walsh of the tourism industry, representing hotels, saying 12 to 15% of beds should be for asylum seekers or refugee accommodation, but 50% of tourism beds are for this purpose in Donegal at the moment. It's 37% in Kerry. What figure would you put on it? What figure should it be?
Much lower. I can't tell you what figure because I don't have the evidence that would be at the fingertips, the information and data that would be at the fingertips of the minister. What I would say, though...
But does what Owen O'Mara, does that sound low, 12 to 15%? Does 37% sound high?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it to be able to comment definitively on it, quite frankly. But I would say this, that from a systemic point of view, we have been slow to comprehensively address a situation that we are aware was evolving. Frankly, in conversations I've had with the minister, for example, I think he is doing his very best. I think he has been isolated by his government colleagues. The Department of Housing have been found wanting in this regard. I'd like to hear as well maybe what the Minister for Tourism has to say about this as well, and what supports have been given to Minister O'Gorman to provide alternative accommodation of a high standard, of a decent standard, for people coming to this country who are seeking asylum and seeking refuge, because the situation that we have at the moment is just simply not sustainable. We were told months ago that there were plans to, as Catherine has said, develop modular housing on public lands in local communities that are serviced, where there are facilities available, and where people can be welcomed and facilitated as best as this society can. That simply hasn't happened. So another example of short-termism, like addressing the housing situation, disproportionately depend on landlords, disproportionately depend on
hotels. I just want to stick to this topic for the moment, Jed.
And
Colin Burke, how do you respond to those charges of a lack of planning, of a lack of cohesion on this issue?
Can I just say, I think it's important that we get the message out there that there's very good value in Irish tourism, and I don't want people to be frightened that there is nothing at all available, because I think that's the message that seems
that's
to be getting out there.
That's what Ireland and those are saying today.
There are,
at the
for instance, you take in
committee.
Dublin, there's new hotels being built, and there's further hotels being built, right? But the issue is that there is very good value in tourism here. And for instance, the government kept the VAT rate at 9% until September. We need also to make sure that we get a balance. And I agree with my colleagues about getting a balance. But I think it's also important to realise that we have 70,000 people in from Ukraine. 15,000 of those people are now working in this country. So they are making a contribution to the state. But they are paying tax.
But what of the charge that the government has been slow here to plan for this? We've heard hoteliers say that there are no plans on how they're going to go.
There's 61,000 people from Ukraine where they're in accommodation provided by government. There's another 9,000 who've been provided with accommodation by individuals within the country. So 61,000, we have to try and work with the hotel sector to see how can we get alternative accommodation other than hotels, and that's something that the government are working on. And we will make progress on that over the next few months as well.
I'll have to get you to shift ever so slightly across, Colin, but more into microphone. And Catherine, you wanted to jump in there to something what Colin was saying.
I just reacted to something he said more than jumping in. That there are 15,000 working and they want to work. We put huge barriers before asylum seekers coming into this country since 2023 years now. The direct provision is there. And they begged and appealed to us to let them work. In the end, they had to go and get a court case to make some changes in it. And this constant distinction between refugees fleeing from the Ukraine war, the Russian war, and asylum seekers and refugees coming in from other war-torn areas is just repulsive to me. It's just not acceptable. incredible to me. Okay, so that's what I was reacting to. I didn't really want to jump in.
Fairness,
now
Catherine,
we do have a problem.
Catherine,
we do have
Catherine,
a problem.
We did respond in a very short time period as regards providing accommodation for over 70,000 people. We made sure that they were accommodated both in our schools and in residential accommodation.
We certainly
and
did.
Also in relation to allowing them to come back into
we certainly
into
we
the,
certainly
in,
did I finish
the,
we
into the employment
we
market.
Certainly did, and it highlights by contrast what we did with the thousands and thousands that we put into direct provision. Two centres in my own city, years on end, no permission to work until the court case, no permission to do anything, and distinguished between them. That's my difficulty here in relation to
Jen
that.
Nash.
Yeah, could I say as well, I mean, I'm aware of cases where, you know, obviously considerable amounts of money generated by citizens here through our taxes has been expended on the response to Russia's war in Ukraine and to our response in terms of the numbers of people who are fleeing conflict, fleeing persecution, who are coming here for other reasons. And they will have their cases processed and so on. Often it takes far too long and there's an indignity in all of that. But can I say this? I mean, I'm aware and I've seen contracts, lucrative contracts that individual organisations are receiving that are not fulfilling their basic responsibilities. There are people fleeing war, fleeing persecution. There's no people who are trauma trained in some centres. There are people who don't, aren't providing the service that they said they would.
I just want to veer back towards what was said at the Eruptus Tourism Committee today. I just want to veer back towards that. And one issue that was raised was the 9% VAT rate. Do you think that should be maintained, Jen Nash?
No, I don't. And it had a utility back in 2011 when it was first introduced as a quick way of creating jobs in a situation where unemployment was heading towards 500,000. We have now spent upwards of €1 billion on a temporary measure that has now become permanent. Listeners will remember me saying this probably from time to time over the years, in an industry that is synonymous with low pay and insecurity in terms of work. So I have a basic rule of thumb when it comes to public investment. No cash without conditions. We usually transfer cash to individual economic sectors if they require stimulus. This sector does not require stimulus.
I'm sorry, Jed, you actually don't know the market. You actually don't know the charges.
I know a little bit about governance and
a little
bit about public investment.
I'll give you a simple example.
The Tax and Welfare Commission said, for example,
of the costs in relation to a hotel. A hotel paid $120,000 for electricity in 2019. Last year, they paid $460,000.
There's other ways of supporting an industry.
I know, but you had your say, Jed. Let Colin Burke respond.
There are costs there.
To an industry that doesn't need it in this way.
The hotel industry has made a huge contribution in this country in bringing people in to this country, providing accommodation, and people spending money here, adding to the Irish economy at a time when the economy was at an extremely low base, when we had huge difficulties with unemployment, where we had 50,000 people a year leaving the country, and they made a contribution as regards changing that issue.
The finance officials themselves have said that this has a deadweight effect. In other words, it is using taxpayers' money to subsidise activity that was happening anyway. It is appalling public policy. And if somebody of the left proposed a policy like that, we would be derided by people from the sector.
And
right,
Catherine, we've also made it attractive for people to invest in that industry here, and as a result, we have no more accommodation available.
I didn't have the privilege of hearing the committee today. I'm not trying to avoid the question. I have an open mind on it. I do think there's a variation. I share a lot of what Jed is saying. But I think there's huge variation within the tourist industry, from small coffee shops and small actors to the bigger picture.
That's true, yeah.
And I don't know how we can tease that out with a fair rate.
There was concern expressed. I appreciate you didn't hear it, but there was concern expressed that industry representatives in their presentation, this was by Fianna Fáil Senator Shane Castles, that they were trying to prepare the ground for more price increases and more rising hotel bed prices in the summer ahead. Would that be a concern for you as well?
Oh, certainly. The rising costs of beds and hotels is just what one say, you know. But I think we need to look rationally at this percentage, the VAT percentage, and see how it can be. I'd like to look at it. I'm somebody that reads report and analyses and looks at things. And
I've read the report for you all.
I was talking to hairdressers about this just before the decision was made on whether to extend the VAT rate again or not. And they were saying that, you know, they've already increased their prices by, I think it was around 10 or 15%. And they come under that tourism sector, even though they felt that they are more vulnerable than other people in that cohort. And they were saying, if you do this, we are going to either have to dramatically increase our prices. Hairdressers, basically, in salons, and in particularly in rural areas, because they were like, we can't afford if that VAT rate goes up, because we will have to pay, you know, we have staff obligations to pay and that kind of thing. And I think that's part of the challenge with this. It is such a disparate group within that 9% VAT rate. It is hard to do something that's fair. But I know Pascal Donoghue had raised concerns after that they had extended it, that repeated reports, particularly around events such as sports events or cultural events, that the prices would shoot up, and that it was so cynical when hotels were given so much support during the COVID situation, that when the government extended that VAT rate, that it was seen that their prices just completely shot up.
Just one final note on this issue. We have the warnings from Fáilte Ireland, from the Tourism Council, saying perhaps there'll be no beds for tourists this summer, but also warnings from Roger O'Gorman this week about a lack of beds for those fleeing war, fleeing persecution, arriving in this country, some of whom are now living on the streets.
Yeah, it's like a two-edged sword. So we've heard about the contracts being continued into the summer, and that creating a problem for ancillary service around those hotels who would have taken tourists in. The flip side is that hotels who are ending their contracts with the government are going to have to essentially kick hundreds of people out on the street. So Roger O'Gorman suggested today that 800 contracts will be ended, or people would be ended with government this week, and this week alone. So that's 800 people who would be without a place to stay, essentially.
And Maddie getting in touch still to 51551. I'm listening and living in Bray. The amount of vacant derelict sites, empty shops, and a brand new shopping centre that is practically empty apart from one unit, and no sign of either of the vacant sites being developed for public housing. That's one texter. And another says, a government that has stretched services, public and private, there is a shortage of schools, creches and houses. You can't find a solution to these problems by inviting people here to live in squalor. So those subtext coming in to 51551. Back in a moment.